Sure. Okay. So a balance sheet would typically have three major items on there. It'll have your assets, your liabilities, and your equity, which sums up to your net worth of your company. And then when we talk about the profit and loss, also known as a P&L, literally those three letters,
Yeah, and
P&L,
L.
because it's supposed to say P and L, but for some reason we just dropped the D over time. So now it's just P&L.
P&L.
Yeah, P&L. Profit and loss.
Yeah.
Essentially, that shows your revenue and your expenses of your business. So you actually need both reports to really give you the whole story of your business. So again, if our listeners are ones that only looks at the profit and loss, not so much the balance sheet because they don't understand it, definitely take the time to understand it because I promise you, all the people you go to for money, whether it's an investor, banker, any kind of lender, they would actually look at your balance sheet first before they look at your profit and loss. So, it's not that difficult to learn it once you understand it. It's not that much of a foreign language, and our listeners are smart, so
Absolutely,
you'll
they
figure
are.
it out. Don't
Yes,
worry.
you will.
Now, let's get started. So I want to kind of work my way back to the balance sheet only because I know that Savannah, you have quite a bit to go through about the balance
Yes.
sheet. So I'm going to focus a little bit more on the profit and loss. Now, for clarity's sake, and for our listeners out there who do have accounting and finance background, they're probably going, "Hey, wait, there's another financial statement out there. It's called the cash flow statement." We know, right? But for simplicity's sake, I mean, cash flow statement is a great statement if, and I feel like owners have to kind of graduate to that because then they have to be at a certain level to really care about how they're spending the money, like what activities your money is going to. So typically, I would say that for most businesses, like you kind of want to focus on your balance sheet and profit and loss first. So that's why we're starting with the basics today. So I would say it comes down to kind of five things on your profit and loss you want to look at, right? One is revenue trend, which everybody likes to see. So you basically line up all your revenue month by month, all your sales essentially, and see how good you're doing. Obviously, trending up is a good thing, trending down, not so good, right? When you see that, you want to be able to know why that is, right? So if you look at the numbers and you're saying, "Oh, it's trending up," and I have no idea how we're trending up, that's not good. You should know why your numbers are reporting what it is. If you don't, then dig into the details and figure it out. But revenue trend is always a really good thing to look at to see what the pattern is. Then you want to make sure that your cost and your expense is actually separated properly or recorded properly. Now, the reason for that is, if we take a little bit of a small step back, is there are three major types of expenses on your profit and loss. Again, for the technical people out there, don't kill me. I know there's others below the line, we're breaking things down simple, right? Because you don't need to look at everything and anything when you're first, where you're just kind of getting familiar with this. So the three major buckets of expense is your cost of goods sold, also known as cost of services. If that's all you do is service, not just no product. Overhead, and then there's G&A, which is also known as general administrative. So think about it this way. So cost of goods sold is stuff, it's like the cost of the actual stuff you need. So when I think about this, and I hate to say it because I'm keep thinking about like, man, what kind of examples can we use that would be really easy to understand? And I keep thinking about a lemonade stand. Because actually, I actually
But
like,
that's, I think that that's a good example,
right?
because that's actually what I have used for my kids over the years to better
Well,
understand how much money they are actually making.
I say that because this weekend we were walking through a neighborhood and there was actually a very cute lemonade stand with this cutest, shyest little girl whose parents were like standing behind her trying to get her to actually sell lemonade. And I think the parents just ended up manning the whole thing. But it was so cute, right? Because
Oh
her
my
parents were
God,
trying
I
to
would
get
have
her to
never
get
done
started.
that.
It was so sweet. And so,
That is
this
so
made me, like,
sweet.
when I was thinking about the example, I was like, oh, let's do a lemonade stand. Because that's stuff like, we can like easily get our heads wrapped around it, right? So if we think about a lemonade stand, your cost of goods sold would be the actual stuff it takes to actually make that lemonade. So it would be like lemons, sugar, water, probably. Basically, if you don't buy any of these, you can't make what your business is set out to do, right? There's the overhead. So this is the cost to keep your lemonade stand running, but they're not technically directly tied to any one glass or one cup of lemonade. So this is maybe the cost of maybe the stand that you bought to have your lemonade business on. Maybe it's the sign that you hang up to say, "Hey, lemonade, 5 cents." Although I don't know. These days, it's probably
Five
more like
cents.
$5.
Where you
that's my inflation. Sorry. I'm still like, you know, like what can we buy with a nickel these days, really? Or maybe it's like an awning so that you don't get, you know, sunburnt in the sun. Like all the stuff goes into actually keeping your lemonade state running, but it has nothing to do with really that particular glass lemonade that you're making. And then last is the general administrative, also known as G&A. So this is all the stuff that's like behind the scenes. So maybe you bought a little notebook and you're writing in a notebook how many lemonades you sold, who you sold it to. So that would be considered a G&A expense. Maybe you decided to hire your pet as a mascot. So it's cute and people will come by and want to pet the dog and also sell lemonade. I don't know. I have a very elaborate lemonade stand in my head, apparently.
I do, because all I can do is think about like, every lemonade stand my kids have had. Where they'd be like, can we make a lemonade? Sure, not a problem. But just know I'm keeping the receipts. So when you make the money, you have to pay me back. Oh, I do? And we're like four houses away from the corner. And every one of them took a table from the house, carried it all the way, and then came back and grabbed the chairs and carried it all the way. And I did not help them. Absolutely not. Because if they said they needed my help, I was like, well, my wages are.
Yeah. And you're telling me to help you carry the table and stand, right?
Right.
Then, you know, you gotta pay about a dollar.
Uh-huh. And I did. I also charged my kids for the cost of the lemonade powder, the cost of the...
which would be cost of goods sold.
Yeah, it is cost, yeah. It is cost of goods sold. I kept the receipts, and that's what I taught all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, well, if you want an umbrella, you can either use the one that I'll let you borrow it for the cost
and of... And that would be overhead.
Correct. I'll let you. Well, I taught them bartering.
Oh, very nice.
So they have no actual the cash, cost of the cost of taking the umbrella is a cup of lemonade for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to make the lemonade, you have to pay me for the labor.
Yes.
The cost of the gas back and forth, you have to pay me for my miles. I literally did. I paid me for the miles. I paid me for the cost of the cups.
Yeah.
This is so unfair. I did not, and I have to sit out there, and you're getting paid.
You didn't even put in taxes yet.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at least I'm not charging you for workers' comp.
What if you tripped over the stand? My gosh. So, see, there's some real-life application.
It's real-life application, but it is true. That is all a very good example of what cost of goods ratio is going
on. All the different costs that you have in your business. It's important you separate this out because as I go to the next three, four, and fifth thing item to look at, a lot of this depends on you understanding how the cost is separated so you get the right margins and ratios to actually look at.
Mm-hmm.
So in summary, cost of goods sold is, back to lemonade, ingredients in your lemonade for the lemonade. Overhead is stuff to actually help sell a lemonade at the stand. And then G&A is everything behind the scenes, helpers, tools, and things like that that are not directly related to any cup of lemonade whatsoever, right? And so your business needs to be set up the same way. Now, again, for all you technical folks out there, if you have inventory and fixed asset, obviously that's also the fourth and fifth bucket type of like expenses. But in this case, we're keeping it simple. And I think most of our listeners, probably 80% of you guys, you probably don't have much fixed asset, probably don't have inventory to worry about, which is why we're only looking at these three. Now, these three are also the only expenses that affects the profit and loss. Fixed asset and inventory affects your balance sheet, right? Which is, again, Savannah's going to get to that. So for these three expenses, the reason why we talk about this is one of the items you have to look at on your profit and loss is your gross profit. So your gross profit is your revenue, so all your sales, less your cost of goods sold. Right, or cost of services. This is why it's important to divvy out these expenses properly. And this is actually more important than your revenue because you can make all the sales you want. But if your cost is just that high, if not higher, then you're just in the negative, which means you don't have a very good business. So that's why you want to look at your gross profit. Next, you want to look at your operating income. So then this is your revenue, less your cost of goods sold, less your overheads, less your G&A. So less all your expenses. And this is the basically... a number that you want to keep positive, of course, because that means that not only did you make enough money to cover your cost of goods sold, what it took to actually provide your service or make your product, but you're also making enough money to cover all of the back office stuff to run your actual business. And this is important because otherwise, if you don't have enough of that and you see that operating income gets smaller and smaller or going into negative, it means that in a few months' time, unless you have more cash coming in other than from your sales, you're about to go bankrupt.
Right.
And that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, I also put in there, this is the account in me for sure. On your profit and loss, especially if it's somebody else doing it for you, always look for an expense line called miscellaneous or mm-hmm. ask your account, because that should not be there.
Right.
Should not be there. You should never have anything that says miscellaneous, ask your accountant, MISC. No, you should actually know where every dollar is going. So yep. That's why I put that in there as the fifth item on your profit and loss to look for. Because once you see that, you need to clear that out and make sure you put in the right bucket of expense that we had talked about.
Although mm-hmm. it isn't uncommon to have it mm-hmm. throughout the year if mm-hmm. you have someone else doing your books. And it should not sit there for very long. It should be like at the end of the month when they're mm-hmm. closing the books. Hey, I have a few questions. What are these transactions? Mm-hmm. I put them into Ask My Account. Mm-hmm. You answer them, they get put away. Mm-hmm. It should not be something that lingers.
Yeah, she's a lot nicer than me. So I'm just saying it should not be there, period. So if you see that, that means you probably didn't answer some question. You need to get that fixed so you get the report properly.
True.
Yeah. you're like, it kind of lingers out there. No, mm-mm. You guys need to step up. Do your thing.
I do tend to play.
Okay, if it's a dollar or two here, that's fine. I'll give you that. Yeah. But typically, you know, it's just a good habit to get into.
Yeah.
So as the owner, I'm sure your account probably asked you this and you just simply didn't reply. So, hey. So the balance sheet, I know Savannah's going to go over a little bit more. So the mm-hmm. only thing I have to say to that is really just equity.
Yes.
On your balance sheets, right? So equity is your assets less your liability. Mm-hmm. It's on the bottom of your balance sheet. What I want to say is beware of negative equity, right? So if you think of equity as representing the net worth of your business, negative equity means that you actually owe more money to other people than what you own in the business,
mm-hmm.
right? So as your bank account is getting closer to zero, let's say, and you need more cash because you got to keep your business running. You're not bringing enough sales to be able to have cash left over. Let's say you go off to like the bank to basically get more money. So let's say you have $75 in the bank account today and then you borrow $100. Well, that means your equity right now is negative $25, mm-hmm. right? In all very simple terms. This is a problem because next time you need more money, right? And you go to an investor, you go to like another banker, you go to a lender. The first thing they're going to do is they're going to look at your equity and be like, I'm sorry to tell you, your company is not worth very much. So why in the world should we put money in you?
Right.
And so that's a really big deal, which is why you really want to take a look at your equity and make sure that that is a nice positive number.
And a good segue from equity is for me to tell you about the rising debt to equity ratio.
Yes.
Which is exactly what she's talking about. So, nobody's going to want to invest in you if you have more debt than equity,
mm-hmm.
Because it's going to look like you're upside down because you are upside down. In order to calculate this, you will have to divide the company's total liabilities by whatever your shareholder equity is or whatever your equity is, if you have shareholders. These numbers are always going to be on your balance sheet. So you're going to find it there. And if you aren't sure of how to do this, and you have someone else doing this for you, doing your books for you, then just ask them for the number. You never want to have your debt be higher than your equity. So I'm going to talk a little more about inventory. Because some of us don't have inventory, some of us mm-hmm. are just service providers, but I do recognize that some of us are, you know,
inventory.
Goods providers. Okay, so what you don't want is to have inventory just sitting there, right? Like you do want to have inventory. You do want to have some inventory because there should be like some coming in, some going out, some mm-hmm. coming in, some going out. However, if you've got products sitting and they're not selling, that is not good.
It's not a good sign.
No, it's putting your company at risk because this isn't product that you can move. And if you can't move it, then it's basically a loss.
Well, you think about it. Inventory is if you buy it, you already forked over the cash for it, right?
Right.
So if you're not selling it, you're not getting any of that back. You're not recouping that cost. Mm-hmm. So the longer it sits, the more like, you know, warning signs that should give you.
Right. So how do you calculate this? You're going to calculate the average inventory for the year, divide the average inventory by the year's sales. That will give you a pretty good sense of at what rate you have inventory just sitting there. And I guess in some ways this could also work with the cost of goods sold, because if you're buying product mm-hmm. for, I'm gonna use construction, because
you don't want to use lemonade.
I always go to construction.
Gosh.
All right, fine. I'll go to lemonade.
Kidding.
Actually, no. I'll go to lemonade because you used lemonade, and okay. So I'm gonna use lemonade.
Okay.
Let's say you were expecting there to be a lot of business coming your way. And this actually happened to my son, because he made a ton of money one weekend and made like no money the following
week. Ah.
And that was the end of his empire. But anyway, so you buy the cups, you buy the lemonade, and the lemonade that you buy, obviously you have to mix it with water in order to create the lemonade, right? Mm-hmm. If you're buying the Minute Maid or whatever it is. So it no problem for you to be able to use one canister from one week to the next, right? So that was a good buy. Now you need to buy more cups, though. You don't have enough cups, so you had to go out and buy more cups. I mean, I don't mean to make this so elementary for you, but this is just a good example of how a higher level of inventory can hurt your numbers without you realizing it. You've made the lemonade and it's just sitting there. Well, you can't necessarily take the lemonade from this week to next week. You got to toss it out. Well, granted, it might be pennies if we're talking about lemonade, but if we're talking about something even bigger than that, if you've got to toss it out like if you're a restaurant or any kind of,
right.
You know, that's a lot of money you're tossing out. And if you do this on a regular basis and are not taking a look at what your measures are, then you're going to end up in a butterfly effect that will hurt your business or, you know, make you go out of business.
That's very true.
So, okay. So accounts receivable. This is a situation that I think the both of us, or rather me, have found ourselves in sometimes when people just don't pay you. Like, give me my money. Rising accounts receivable. If your accounts receivable is, if the money is tied up, you're not generating a return. Mm-hmm. You look like you're making X amount of money if you look at your accrual, because that's how much you bill out for.
Yeah.
But if you look at it as cash and you're like way lower than that because nobody's paying you, then you need to figure out some other process on how to recoup that money. Because chances are you've already paid your employees. You've mm-hmm. already paid for the goods. If you're not getting paid for the service or for the operation, whatever it may be, then you're losing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, at the end of the day, you need to look at both profitability, which is what we were talking on the profit mm-hmm. and loss, and then you need to look at cash flow, which mm-hmm. is what accounts receivable and inventory, all that does, because it ties up your cash, right? You're basically either paying for something that you haven't used yet, or for accounts receivable, most likely you paid for the cost of doing that service or product and your customers haven't paid you yet. So again, on both scenarios, you're kind of forking over the money first.
Yep.
Which means that you can't spend that cash anywhere else unless you do something with what's there. And
right.
That's where people get into a bit of a pickle.
And it can creep up on you if you're not paying attention, especially if you have a large client base.
And then also, if you go to banks, mm-hmm. lenders, they'll look at your accounts receivable and then they'll see how quickly your customers are paying you. And this is a big deal, because if your customer's not paying you very quickly, they'll know that there's something going on, in a sense of like, hey, this company technically always needs cash, which means as a lender, first thing they'll think about is, are they going to have enough cash to pay me back?
Right.
And pay our interest?
Right.
Yeah.
Or are they going to come back and require more time or more money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say you have a fixed asset. You don't want that fixed asset anymore. It's fine, but just don't sell it to pay down a debt. So let's say you have trucks, whatever you, I find that oftentimes, I'm bringing this up because I find that oftentimes that tends to be a vehicle that a client sells in order to pay off their whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It hasn't happened that many times, but it's happened a couple of times, which makes me feel like I should bring it up.
Hmm.
So if you're having to sell an asset, whatever that asset is, in order to pay off a debt, that's another thing that the bank is going to be looking at. The first thing they're going to be seeing is that, hey, wait a second. Well, and plus it's going to be identified on your balance sheet. Gains and losses from fixed assets as are noted on your income statement. And disposals are going to be apparent on that balance sheet. Banks are going to see this. And that, again, they're going to be like, hang on, is this company going to start dismantling itself in order to pay me? And then they're not going to be able to afford to pay me. And then I'm going to get stuck holding the bag. So they're going to see it. So don't do it. All right. So and then next, lastly, I want to talk about what an unsteady cash flow could look like. And it is tied to your accounts receivable and accounts payable. So back then I said, oh, your numbers aren't having fun with you. It is concerning when your cash flow is going up and down. Let's say you have a really good AR month and then you have a really bad AR month. Why do you not have a steady, consistent, repetitive cash flow? If the net cash flow is low year after year compared to your net income, you're getting ready to experience a cash crunch. And again, banks are going to identify this, or we're using banks, but banks are not always
lenders. Let's just say lenders. People who lend you money,
whoever it is that's going to be lending you money,
or investors too, right? Yes. Like they may want to invest in your company, but not after they see that.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're doing one of these numbers, they're not gonna want that. I mean, you wouldn't want that either, right? Like everybody wants consistency in all aspects of your business, not just in your money, right? So anytime you're noticing that there are some zigs where there should not be zags, then you need to be paying attention to why is that happening, right?
That's a good point.
Yes. So we are going to take a quick break. So before we move on to our point counterpoint, because we want you to be a part of our conversation and let us know what you want to hear. Send us questions, comments to our email, thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com, to ask questions related to our show, or just let us know how much you love us. we want to give you what you want to learn about, and we want to be more interactive with you. So, you know, hopefully as we get more questions and comments, we can at the end of each show start answering questions. We want to be the best that we can be for you. So
we want to be the best podcast possible.
Yeah.
Well, that too, but
yeah. But we want to be more than just us telling you what to do and how to do it.
That's true.
You know, if there is something that you're
not finding an answer to, like your questions.
And if you want to stay anonymous, let us know, because that's also possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what we want. We want you to start talking to us, but only nice things.
Please don't troll us. That's what she's saying.
I can't handle it. Can't you tell?
Oh, she can't handle it. You just don't want her coming back at you about it.
Can't. All right. Anyway, What point? Okay. So I have a great story.
Okay. Are we doing point or
we're not doing point.
We're doing raw truth, apparently.
We're doing raw truth, apparently.
All right.
So should we do you feel like, I feel like we're going to agree on point counterpoint. I feel like we always agree on point counterpoint, but do you feel like there's something that maybe I would disagree with?
I think the only thing we disagreed about is the ask your accountant thing.
That is true.
I'm like, get it right, people, every single month. Don't you wait.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, so there are two things that should not be there, but they'll end up being there anywhere. There's the unreconciled transactions will sometimes be sitting there because there are items that maybe whoever knows. I mean, sometimes the webosphere does weird things.
It should only be items either at a later date or something that's truly in transit. So usually it happens only at the end of the month, where maybe you walk to the bank to make a deposit on the 31st, but it doesn't show up on the 1st until the 1st. Like, that's legitimate. But outside of that, no, you should not be carrying on unreconciled differences.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it will exist. You will see it. It will exist month to month if you have future transactions that have not yet been reconciled.
Yes, if you're doing the books yourself, which we highly do not recommend, right? No. So no. if you're hiring someone to do it, I mean, I would assume most of the listeners will not go down to that level, right? No. To look at reconciliations. Just, I guess, be aware that that is a key
it is
control.
Something that, yes.
If you hire somebody else, and if for whatever reason you happen to be nosing around the reconciliation reports, just, I guess, know the fact that unreconciled differences shouldn't happen very often. And, or if it does, it should have good reason. Correct. See, we agree. We disagree, and then we agree. And then we just, yeah, see?
This is a thing. We can't keep agreeing on these things, but eventually.
Universal truth, people. Universal truth.
I think at some point there's going to be something that you say that I'm going to say absolutely not. I disagree with you. And then.
Sounds like a challenge to our listeners. Throw something at us. Let us know if we'll disagree for something. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. There are things we disagree on, though. So, yeah. One of these days.
Do we, though?
I feel like there is. Maybe. I don't know. Raw truth?
Yes, let's do it. We're going to go on to the raw truth, where we each share our own gritty experience with today's topic. We want the listeners to know that success isn't easy, it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. We hope you will hear our cautionary tales and learn from them. That was a horrible Scottish accent.
I didn't even know what that was, but...
I was trying.
Oh.
It wasn't great. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on from it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't hear
me. Nope.
Okay, so I have a fun story.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So many, many moons ago, I needed to find a way in order to make money. And my daughter at the time, I had to do something that was from home in some way, shape, or form. Because this was back in 2002, I guess, or 2003. And you know, there weren't a whole lot of options outside of Mary Kay and Avon. Mm-hmm. And
back in the day,
there wasn't that many options. Virtual assistants was a thing, but I really did not want to do, telemarketing. Although I ended up doing telemarketing and virtual assistants after this.
Yes, you did.
So, I started working with the body shop at home. I was doing the makeup division, and I would go to people's houses and I would do demonstrations. And because I used to do makeup as well, like I did it on the side just as something fun. And so I did that, and I was like, oh, look, hubby, look at all this money I'm making. I'm making so much money. And he would be like, you know, keeping quiet. Until one day I was like, look at all this. Look at all this stuff I'm doing. And then one day he was like, okay, how many hours did you spend on this? How much time did you spend at these parties? I mean, he saw that I was running myself ragged, doing these parties, trying to fax over invoices and like all of these things I was doing. Turned out I was making somewhere along the lines of $1.92 an hour.
Well done, you.
Yeah. Yep. And so I was like, well, all these products, because you had to buy the products with your own money.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
And so
that's what they call inventory.
Yep. Really smart on their end, not so smart on my end. And that was the time in which I put away my body shop apron, hung it up, and used all of the product myself. But, you know, that was a very good lesson in recognizing how much money I actually was making.
Yeah.
Here I was thinking I was making a lot of money, whereas I was making no money. So.
Well, you get that all the time, right? And that's the thing is, you know, I'm not like trying to be a cynic about this, but I mean, being in this industry for so long, being in business for so long, we get that when people quote how well their business is doing, they always talk about gross revenue, which is their sales.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. You can bring in all the money you want, but like Savannah, you were saying, if all that money is also going out just to support these sales, and at the end of the day, you're taking home a dollar something and change per hour, first of all, you're not doing really well as a business. And I just feel like sometimes people wave that, you know, sales number around like, oh, my business is like $20 million. Well, doesn't mean crap if your, you know, expense is $19.9 million.
For sure. Yeah.
Like, right? And that's not even enough to cover your back office, right? Yeah. And some people look at it and they're like, oh, well, my gross profit is this. But hey, what about all this overhead? You have to have overhead to run mm-hmm. a business. Mm-hmm. And so I always take it with a grain of salt when people say that, because this, and especially like, I hate to say it, especially like tech companies, right? Because mm-hmm. they have this very unusual environment that they live in, which is they get a huge load of money up front to basically make this business that people actually give them permission to be in the loss for a couple years, right? As you're supposed to, you know, do R&D and get this product even better and better until it's somewhat profitable. Mm-hmm. But there's so many techs that startups that don't make it because of that. Like they have sales and they have no idea how to control their costs and they essentially go bankrupt. So
wouldn't you say that GovCons are kind of in that pool as well? Not in the exact same way, but I feel like GovCon sometimes, I have seen, oftentimes they're really good at doing whatever type of government contractor position they've chosen their yeah. company to be in, but they are really not good business owners.
So with GovCon, typically it's a cash flow problem, not a profitability problem.
True.
Because like, in government contracting, for you to get a contract, you have to go through quite a few hoops, understanding what your cost is to be able to propose a price to the government. They almost put in like guardrails to make yeah. sure you don't bankrupt yourself or propose something that's not mm-hmm. profitable, right? Not profitable or not economical to them either. Absolutely. But it's certainly like, and if you go into government contracting, the reason why they have so many like regulations and standards and everything about how you calculate your price, I mean, it's not anything out of the ordinary. Every company should be kind of looking at their stuff the same way. But they basically have you make sure you built in all of your overhead, G&A, mm-hmm. and your cost of goods sold into your price. They're kind of making sure that you don't run yourself into the ground. Mm-hmm. But with government contracting, the problem they get to, which is also more, I guess it's a more sophisticated problem to run into, which is cash flow. Typically, more mature businesses run into that. But government contractors run into it faster because they win this contract and then they don't get paid for another 60 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't realize that just because you won a contract and you can run around and tell people that I just won a $20 million IDIQ, whatever you want to call it, right? Mm-hmm. Like for the next 5 years, doesn't mean that $20 million shows up at your doorstep.
Right.
You know? And so they're out there spending like they got the $20 million.
Yep.
And whoops, now you have a cash flow problem.
So. Which is what I find oftentimes. And I've been a part of the unfortunate process of closing down, I guess, mm-hmm. not necessarily the bankrupt of a business, right. but the closing down of a government contractor's company yeah. because they just did not manage their selves correctly mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I feel like definitely, well, we're going to talk about ways in which you can take this conversation and make it your own. But before we do, we're going to take a commercial break. Wouldn't it be great to hear the sound of us promoting your business for you right here on our show?
When she says us, she really means her, to be quite honest. She's the one with the radio voice.
I have a face for radio. You can have that and more by producing a show or shows. All you have to do is email us at thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com. Express your interest. We will share with you what you'll receive with your investment. You'll have the opportunity to have your name and the name of your business mentioned multiple times during our show, have your company logo on our social media, along with details on how to get in touch with you and other marketing opportunities as well. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. And if you do support us, we won't have to mention this so often. I'm just saying, if you're sick and tired of hearing about it, help us out. Anyway.
Wow. It's also helping you out.
It's also helping you
to all of our listeners, which yeah. luckily we have listeners.
We do. We're not trying to panhandle here. All I'm saying is, help us help you help us. So, anyway, all right. So in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale, revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
Okay, so today my example is Uber. We've all heard about Uber ride sharing. They've had historically always reported really high revenues ever since the inception, right? They kind of took off and did really well for themselves. Mm-hmm. And they also expanded. They're several countries. They're, you know, all over the U.S., of course, now all over the world. And they've expanded to also like Uber Eats for food delivery and whatnot. But behind the scenes, I'm not sure if everyone remembers this, but like 5 years ago, I want to say, was like Uber was almost had to close on itself. Because what happened is, even though they had big revenues, even though they were globally present, they were posting losses, significant losses year over year, like just losses. And they did that was because, one, they spent really heavily on expanding. So again, you know, they're venture funded and everything like that. So they had cash to spend. So they spent a lot of it on expansion. They also created a lot of subsidies and a lot of actually discounts in order to kind of gain the market share. Yeah. Like they were so severely discounted. That, well, I don't know if you guys noticed, but the last 5 years, the price of Uber went up mm-hmm. for a good reason because they were kind of upside down in the way their pricing is and their costs. They had to do a lot of work in research and development, which is, again, cost going out because they have to, again, be up on top of the self-drive, like the car technology. I think they were exploring self-driving technology and all those things that didn't really have any immediate returns. It was all long-term, like, projections. And then they also had a lot of legal battles, right? We've heard them in the news, riders getting kidnapped, like, you know, riders, like, you know, getting like, you know, drivers doing crazy things. And there was a lot of lawsuits. So they had to basically, you know, those lawsuits didn't exactly make the money. They had to fork over money in order to be able to be represented in court.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that. So it's so interesting because on paper, if you didn't know any better, you would have thought that Uber was this high flying, doing amazingly well globally, recognized type of company. I mean, basically, you know, but then basically was losing every single month, every single year, significant losses. And a lot of time these tech startup companies are kind of like in that trajectory. And the idea is that they should be actively managing. And Uber just got to a point where I think the shareholders had to, like the board or somebody had to take over and be like, yo, you guys can't keep doing this. Like, we're just losing money at this point. And so they did a big switch around, which is why you saw the prices go up in Uber in the last 5 years.
I was just looking up. I was pretty sure. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I wanted to just make sure before I said anything about it. On Netflix, there's a movie called Super Pumped. And it's about the Uber. It's the Uber story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. I just looked it up to make sure that that's what it is. It's called.
Same thing. Who else is WeWorks? Same story.
It's Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber.
Yeah. I mean, WeWorks went through kind of the same issue where, you know, they were, again, globally, so many built, like, expanded. Yeah. Like expanded really, really fast. And in the back end, they kept losing. Well, one, because the owner kept spending money.
I was just going to say, because the owner was crazy.
Yeah, he was definitely spending a lot of money back there, but still, like, you know, again, high revenue, negative, like gross, maybe like probably net operating loss year after year. And so that's what we were saying is, you know, don't get it. They got mesmerized by those big sales dollars. What really matters at the end of the day is the net that is, you know, left over.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So there have been so many companies that have fallen due to money mismanagement. And FedEx is probably one of my favorite comeback stories, so much so that it was my example from show 7, and it's going to be my example today too. So FedEx was founded in 1971 by Frederick Smith. He is the son of the founder of the Tuttle House, which is now the Dixie Greyhound line. He attended, so it's not like this guy is a rags to riches. He's a riches.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That was actually something I learned. Because they keep telling about the whole college story, right? Yeah. How he wrote the college paper that became his business plan, but they never talk about, like, he kind of just came from money.
He came from money. I mean,
probably helps.
He went to Yale. Come on. Proposed the idea about poor people. Yale, did they? I don't think so. And he proposed the idea behind FedEx in an assignment, as Tiffany mentioned. He earned a C for that. After school, he went on to the military and he served 2 tours in Vietnam, and he earned a Silver Star, a Bronze Star, and 2 Purple Hearts.
Good for him.
Yes. And I tell you, a Purple Heart is not something you want to earn, but I highly respect anyone who's got 1. Not, I mean, he's got 2. In 1970, he purchased the controlling interest in ARC Aviation Sales. And in 1971, he used $4 million of his own inheritance and raised an additional $91 million to start FedEx. So, side note, even though he came from money, he could have squandered.
He did well for himself.
He did what, thankfully, a well-rounded child would do. Went to school, went to war.
Yeah.
But he started his own business and he forged his own path. However, during the first 2 years in business, the company did accumulate an enormous amount of debt.
Yeah.
A lot of it had to do with rising fuel prices, and therefore it was at the edge of bankruptcy. If any of you are familiar with history, you'll recognize that this is right around that 1974-5 mark, and the second half of the 70s just stunk, if almost the same, if not more, than they do right now. Anyway, so during the first 2 years in business, the company accumulated, Smith went to great lengths to keep the company afloat. After a crucial business loan was denied, he took the company's last $5,000 to Las Vegas. I mean, can you imagine? Like, step back for a moment. Like, imagine if you were...
it all red.
Yeah, yeah. Like, imagine if you were like his, I don't know, his admin or somebody that worked for him.
What are you thinking?
And he was like, well, we only got $5,000 in the bank. Guess I'm going to Vegas. And you're like, excuse me, is anyone hiring? Like, what would you do? So he goes to Vegas. He wins $27,000 gambling on blackjack. He was able to cover the company's $24,000 fuel bill. It did keep FedEx alive for just one more week. He was able to buy a week with that. But by 1976, FedEx had produced its first profit of $3.6 million.
Guess he figured a few things out.
He sure did. 7 years later, FedEx became the first U.S. company to reach revenue of $1 billion with 10 years of the startup with no merger or acquisition, and has been thriving ever since. And granted, I call it FedEx, but back then it was called Federal Express.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Any hoozles? All right, so we are going to move on. There is a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. And we're going to drill down a bit further here to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources that you can take to get you to that next level.
So I got two recommendations, both books, and it's all about basically learning the financial report without all the technical jargon that comes with it, right? So my biggest fear ever is to one day be my accounting professors from college and just sit up there and drone on and on about like technical stuff that I have no idea how to apply to real life, right? And so I always often gravitate to a lot of books that just say things in layman terms, literally. Yes. And it also helps me when I kind of have to be that financial business translator for my business owners who are brilliant at what they do, but simply didn't go to school for an accounting degree, right? They just don't know that stuff. So I like, you know, obviously lemonade.
Yeah, yeah.
I use examples like lemonade to make my point. So two books that I've read, I think is great for anybody else to read to really get a handle on the financials without having to feel like they're going through an academic textbook is Financial Intelligence, A Manager's Guide to Knowing What the Numbers Really Mean by Karen Berman and Joe Knight. That's a pretty good book. Mm-hmm. The other one is called The Layman's Guide to Understanding Financial Statements, How to Read, Analyze, Create, and Understand Balance Sheets, Income Statements, and Cash Flow, and More. I guess that says it all. That's written by Simon Lawrence, and I found out that currently it is on Kindle Unlimited. So if you happen to have a subscription, that'll be free to you to basically go download. Four stars out of 105 reviews. So you know, should be a pretty quick run through for you.
So I have a few recommendations. Firstly, I will reiterate the book that I recommended last time, which is How to Read and Understand Financial Statements When You Don't Know What You Are Looking
For. I love these very literal book titles.
It's like they were written in the 1700s with these, you know, sentences for whatever. Anyway, but this is by Brian Klein. It's a short read, and you know what it's about.
Short read.
Yeah, it goes into great detail. It's great for business owners in every stage of their business, from beginning to selling/investing. I do also recommend watching Super Pumped. I think knowing better the Uber story is, I don't know. I haven't watched it yet, but I've seen the trailers and I'm super pumped.
And that's how they named the movie, the documentary.
But I have another Netflix show, and it's totally unrelated, but hopefully it's inspiring. I watched Beckham, and I really, really, really enjoyed watching it and seeing his tenacity. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting.
Well, his is a rag to riches kind of story. No, I didn't watch it, but
oh my gosh,
his story is very different.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And to be frank, he went from being the best to not being the best,
to being the most hated,
to being hated, to being benched, to being great, to being benched.
He's
everywhere. He was kind of everywhere. And so he was financially as well.
Yeah.
And what I think you will get out of that is that if your company is experiencing a low, that does not mean that's where you need to stay, or that is not an indicator of what the future could potentially mm-hmm. look like. I think that the Beckham story was very inspiring, at least to me. Mm-hmm. And I did relate it on a business level to myself.
Yeah.
I had my youngest watch it with me. And it really kind of builds whatever way it is in which they film it. There's something about it, but it really does build a fire in you to make you feel like if Beckham can come back from these horrible lows, I think I can too. And I think
sounds inspirational.
I think that between Beckham and Super Pumped, you get two great examples of persons that have persevered.
Well, if you're feeling a little bit low, maybe you should watch one of those.
Yeah.
Then it happens in business. I think it is kind of ironic, though, that everybody goes into business to make money.
Yes.
And yet the number one thing they ignore the most is how to handle money.
Right.
So it seems ironic when you see it that way. But in action, that's what happens quite a bit. I'm sure you've seen a lot of businesses have, especially this is our field of expertise, is finance and accounting and money. Mm-hmm. It's the number one thing people ignore. So
it's interesting. Yeah. It's so interesting. Not only do they ignore it, but they also take advantage is really the only way that I can say this. But they take advantage of what they have, what they don't have. And are reckless sometimes. And that's why I start every show with, just because you own a business doesn't mean you're a business owner.
This is part of being a business owner, for sure.
For sure. Right?
And
even though we're talking about, we're on a theme of how to
handle the money in your business.
Yeah. How to gain aid or funding. It is also a good practice if you don't need to gain funding. This is a good practice, what we talked about today. If you just as a general business practice. So please join us for our next episode, where we're going to dive even deeper. Put on that scuba gear. We're going to dive in even deeper into loan, grant, and aid options. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We would love for you to also share our episodes. Hit them like buttons. Boop, boop, boop. I've been doing my best to post daily TikTok videos. Not so great at it, but I'm trying.
Please go like it. Leave a comment.
Please make me feel better about myself, because I feel like an old crone on the TikTok platform. But anyway, all of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind the business behind your business, because all great successes start small.